Been a tough couple of weeks, hasn't it? You look at that and you just think, geez. You talk to people who've lost everything. A friend of mine's condo was flooded to the roof. Nothing, they have nothing left. I don't think I've ever seen a city hit as hard as this. And I just spent the last week in Manitoba where flooding is something that happens commonly. But this has been bad. I was down in Kensington just before I left. You see the piles of everyone's lives on their front lawns. It's like photo albums, wedding dresses, clothes their kids took their first step in. The couch that they made those kids on. Life shouldn't be this hard, should it? Like, this is kind of crazy. It's weird. This message was chosen a couple months ago. This is the last message in our Best Of series. And so I didn't choose the message, whereas normally I choose the messages. This was chosen by everyone here in our virtual community. And it was one of the highest downloaded messages I'd ever done. It's a bit ironic because what we're going through. But I think there's something important here to post-flood Calgary. Because right now, for many of us, life is hard. In ancient times, they would have looked at a flood like this and said, well, God's angry at us. That's why this has happened. And intellectually, I don't believe that's the case. That's my personal beliefs. If you do, that's fair. For me, I can talk about rainfall, snow load, climate change. I can talk about drainage, dikes, levees, dams, weirs, cubic liters per minute, flow rates, all those things. But in ancient times, they would have looked at this moment as a spiritual event. So I want you guys to do a thought experiment today. I want yourself to just imagine, put yourself into this place where you believe today that this happened because God's angry at you. I'm not saying that you need to believe this. I'm just saying I want you to sit in that place today. Just think like that for a few minutes. What if this is the story of the Noetic flood all over again? God looks around at our lives and says, you people suck. I'm done with you all. And just... whoosh. How do you fix that? Think about it. If this would happen because God is angry, how do you make things right with God? How do you get God to forgive you? So if you were a Jew living 3,000 years ago, you'd have had the answer to that question. In fact, everybody had the answer to that question. So let me state to start this thing off. Their worldview is completely different from ours. So you kind of have to, it's like watching a science fiction movie. You got to just kind of suspend disbelief. Things can happen that you're not used to. So just go with me on this, okay? Imagine you're living 3,000 years ago and something bad's happened, like this, a flood. And you're sure it happened because God is angry at you. So you'd have gone behind your house to your herd, because everyone had a herd, and you'd have picked the most beautiful female goat you had, the one that you raised from young, that's just gorgeous. You'd have gone into the pen and put a rope around that goat's neck, and if you walked it down to the street, and then down the street, and everyone watching would have known exactly what's going on, they would have been giving you the thumbs up going, yes, that is what you're supposed to do. And you'd have walked it down to the temple. And not just any temple. It had to be the temple in Jerusalem. And as you walked up closer, the walls of the temple would just feel huge. Kind of this feeling like there's more to this world than just my little life. And as you'd walked in the temple, it would be quiet. And you'd feel close to God. Because literally you believe God was living in the middle of the temple. God was like, from me to that wall away. taken that goat to the priest. They would have put it on an altar with for you, just kind of a raised block of stone. And you've done this many times. So as the priest laid the goat down, you'd put your hand on the goat's head. And then in the end of that goat's life, you and God would be okay. No matter what happened, no matter what you did, no matter what you didn't do, that would have fixed it. Isn't that amazing? The book of Leviticus says this: thus the priest shall make atonement on your behalf, and you shall be forgiven. After that moment, you would have stepped back with your head held high. No shame. It's done. It's fixed. Everything's okay. You and God are good. That was the thing that fixed it. Sometimes I look back and think, wouldn't that be nice? Whenever something goes wrong with you and God, you knew how to fix it. It was easy. It was straightforward. You make God angry, you go to the temple, you make a sacrifice, you and God are good again. You knew how to make things right with God. When your heart cries out and says, how do I make this right, God? You knew the answer. Now, to make the rest of the story make sense, you have to realize one key point. This making things right with God could only happen in one place. One. The temple in Jerusalem. And not anyone could go there. Probably many of us couldn't have gone there. You had to be a Jew, which means that you were circumcised. The reason I named this message Bringing Back Ritual Circumcision is the feeling that it would be nice to be a Jew back 3,000 years ago and just know how to fix things with you and God. Where it's just all figured out and you just had to do the sacrifice and everything was good. There's a problem. You see, about 66 years around the time of Jesus, 66 AD, around the time of Jesus, the Romans occupied Jerusalem. And the Jews weren't happy about it. In fact, they hated the Romans, hated the Romans. And finally, something broke, their straw broke the camel's back, lost it. It started with people getting angry, then mobs, then they started attacking Roman citizens. You know, they... And finally, it was all out rebellion. And this isn't good for the Romans. So the Romans did what the Romans did. They got all their soldiers together, and they marched on the rebellion. Thinking, as I would, 5,000 heavily armed soldiers would put the fear of God into the mob, and they'd disperse, and it'd be over, right? In that year, in the valley of Beth Hebron, the unthinkable happened. It was a narrow valley, and as the soldiers marched up the valley, the rebellion was at the top, and they threw everything they could down at them. Like, you name it. Water bottles, rocks, anything that they had close at hand. And then they started to run down those valley sides at the heavily armed soldiers. Just think of that moment. The person who's taken everything away from you that you hate more than anything. They've stolen your life. They've stolen your religion. The enemy is down there. So you pick up a sword off the ground. You've never even held one before. And you're running down into a mass of heavily trained soldiers. Going, well, at least I died for what I believe in. And then the most amazing thing happened. You see, as you're running down towards them, for whatever reason, the valley floor was not set up that they could get into their normal formation. And those 5,000 soldiers, instead of fighting as a single unit, had to fight individually. And they had no clue how to fight individually. So they did what any of us would do. Those 5,000 Roman soldiers ran. Just turned around and... whoosh. And there you are with all the rage and all the horrible things that have done to you and your family and your community. And what do you do when you see the back of your enemy? You let him have it. History tells us that the Jews killed most of those 5,000 soldiers that day. In a move that nobody expected, the Jews won. It's kind of like the world went silent for a moment. Nobody beat the Romans. The Jews had won. And they spent that whole winter celebrating the beginning of the revolution, the beginning of the emancipation. They would be free until the next spring, when 60,000 Roman soldiers landed on their doorstep. You see, Rome ruled out of fear. If someone isn't afraid of Rome, they're going to lose all of their territories. So they had to fix this and fix it fast. 60,000 heavily armed soldiers marched on Jerusalem. The Roman historian Tacitus recorded that there was 500,000 men, women, and children in Jerusalem fighting back. Didn't matter. The Romans broke through the walls of Jerusalem, and then they destroyed the city. When I say destroy, don't think Calgary flood. Think they took the city apart. There's artwork from that time where they took the temple down brick by brick. They stole every piece of value out of it. They smashed everything that had any sort of religious significance. That temple was like it didn't exist anymore. That temple where you could go and make things right with God didn't exist anymore. So now what do you do? You're a good Jew. Something's gone wrong with you and God. You know how to fix it, right? But you can't. Because the place you need to go doesn't exist anymore. Your life, and the life of your entire community, just got infinitely harder. And the interesting thing is, that's where we find ourselves today. We still felt the effects of that moment in history. It's always been hard for us to know how to make things right with God, hasn't it? We use things like forgiveness and these kind of abstract qualities that we don't know. There's no take the goat, get it sacrificed, you're good. It's maybe you're good. And if you're part of Friends Church, you know we've dismantled all the church kind of built rules and regulations that says, oh, if you do this, you're good. If you don't do this, you're not good. That part's gone away too. So how do we know we're good with God? We probably have less certainty than we've ever had. We don't know what necessarily will work. When we ask the question, how do we make this better, God? I don't know that I have a firm answer all the time. It's hard. I'm guessing there's times when we ask ourselves, is this too hard? Should it be this hard? Should connecting with God be this hard? Sometime after the Roman invasion and the fall of the temple, an author that we see in the Bible wrote to a group of Christians in that post-destroyed temple period. And I think they were thinking what we're thinking. This is hard. Maybe we're doing it wrong. Maybe this isn't the right way. And the author wrote these words on their difficult journey. They said this: let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. Think about that metaphor, a race. Not a leisurely walk, not jumping in my car to go two blocks. We're talking a race where you give your all. I've been training for a triathlon for the last 4 months. I've been going to the point where I think I can't go any further. My coach keeps saying, on race day, you'll push harder than that. It feels like after 3-4 hours of training, I start to get a glimpse of what that author's trying to say. It's past the point where this is always fun. It's past the point where it's easy. It's at a level of intensity that sometimes is scary. And that's how the author describes this relationship with God. The word he uses to describe the difficulty, hopomonia, is actually to hold out in face of difficulty. It's not endurance like we think, how far you can go. It's how much you can take. It's like an Ironman triathlon, 4-kilometer swim, 180-kilometer bike, followed by a full marathon with a broken leg. Like, this is grueling. How long can you take it? Or in my language, it's going to get really hard sometimes. This is an all-out adventure race, grueling at times, heartbreakingly beautiful at times. It's never short. It's rarely easy. I get to this moment and it feels kind of dismal, right? But when I first did this, I had just come back from a motorcycle ride with my brother-in-law. We were out cruising the trails out south of Calgary. We were riding this trail, and I still remember it to this day. We'd come up to a ridge, and we were riding along the top of this ridge, and it was just this beautiful trail, sun kind of flowing through the trees. The trail flowed beautifully, so it was just like, it took almost no work. We just had a blast until the bearing on my bikes blew out. We came down a hill, and we couldn't get back up. And suddenly, we're overlooking a cut block, a logged area. I don't know if any of you have been to a logged area, anyone tree planted. This is basically hell on earth. What you see there is what the area looks like. So when a log machine comes, they come, pick up the tree, cut off the bottom. Then they strip all the branches off and just leave all the branches down. So sometimes it's 2 feet thick of just branches sitting on top of each other. Then if that's not bad enough, if there's a tree that they don't really like or for whatever reason isn't good, they just cut it off and throw it on top. So here's me and my brother-in-law looking over a cut block. Our trail goes nicely to the edge of it, and it looks like it's going to go right through the middle of it. So we look at each other and we're like, we can't go back. And so we start trying to ride our motorcycles through this. And it's horrible. Like, within 2 feet, the front end goes down, we're off the bike, and we spend the next probably hour lifting our motorcycles, 350-pound motorcycles, 2-3 times a minute. I remember the part that finally broke us. My brother-in-law is on a hill like this, his bike's like this, it falls this way, he's underneath the bike. I'm over here, my bike's messed up. And I see him basically bench press his bike 3 times. 350-pound bike. Gets it up, falls over. Gets it up, falls over. And you can just tell his spirit is like, Vince, I can't take this anymore. And so finally, we're like, we're done. This is too hard. There's, like, we're not where we're supposed to be. This is bad. So we basically just shove our bikes over into the nearest pile of trees, and we start walking. And I can still remember, we walked maybe 100 feet, and we kind of came down this little lip to where the road is, which isn't a road because they don't want people to drive on it, so they basically put all the leftover lumber on that road and pile it up, so it's basically hell. We go through this little valley, up this little berm, and I remember seeing, just kind of on the edge of the cut block, right on the trees right over there, the skankiest little quad track. And to me, that was the most beautiful sight I'd seen in days. I think that's the kind of journey the author is using to describe some moments in our relationship with God. He ends his description of our journey saying this: don't sit around on your hands. No more dragging your feet. Clear the path for the long-distance runners so no one will trip and fall. so no one will step on a hole and sprain an ankle. Help each other out and run for it. It's kind of like he says, I know this is hard. Keep going. I know it seems like this isn't the right way. It is. Keep going. I know you miss coming closer to God through the temple, and you're trying to figure out how to connect with God right now. I know this new way is hard, but don't give up. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it's the wrong way. Our relationship with God seems to come with moments of intense struggle and difficulty. And the author says this, for it's the well-trained that find themselves mature in their relationship with God. Or maybe I'd say it's this way. It's the people who've persevered through much, who seem to have the fullest relationship with God. Just because it's hard doesn't mean you're on the wrong path. So where are you today in your spiritual life? Do you feel like it's a walk in the park? Or are you on that cup block with me and my brother-in-law, trying to bench press those heavy bikes up again? After this tragedy in Calgary, I'm sure some of us are saying, why? Why did this happen? How could this happen? I know it feels like the way is difficult. Like maybe we're going the wrong way. I know that feeling. But for all of us who are feeling that way, who feel like this is too difficult a way to connect with God, I want us to remember those words of the author of Hebrews. Who says, yes, I know it's hard. There's never been a guarantee that it's going to be easy. When we yearn for that easy Christianity where everything is told to us, where everything's figured out, we're not searching after God. We're looking for easy. When someone says to you, oh, the way to connect with God is easy, I don't know if they're telling the truth anymore. It's hard sometimes, isn't it? Asking the tough questions. Saying, God, what now? What do we do in Calgary? My house wasn't affected. What do I do now? How do I help my neighbor? The people who've lost everything saying, where are you in this, God? I think the journey with God is difficult sometimes. And yet, Calgary is pulled together in a way I never expected. In a city where people who are born and who lived here are rare, the community spirit we see around us is beautiful, isn't it? People bringing clothes to the shelters, helping people pump out their basements, bringing food, doing laundry, bringing the water that Friends Church talks about to the people in need. And yes, the tragedy is horrible, and I wish it never happened, but often tragedy gets us focused on the right things. I just came back from my grandmother's funeral, and I found a moment as I looked over her grave and saw her casket sitting at the bottom of that grave going, what is life all about? I was walking through Kensington last week, and I saw a guy sitting on his porch, covered in mud, face mask pulled down. It was like that moment of drinking his coffee was the most spiritual moment he's had in weeks. His house is destroyed, all his memories are sitting on the front yard, and yet that moment drinking his coffee was beautiful to him. I always find that my bed's the most comfortable after sleeping on the side of the road for a while. My shower feels the best after I haven't had a shower in a week or two. Even in the midst of moments of struggle and difficulty, that's the moments when beauty often show up. I don't think we'd see it without the struggle we're going through. So let me finish it this way. Along with the author of Hebrews, I say this, don't be scared of hard. Sometimes life's going to be hard. Sometimes connecting with God is going to be hard. I know it feels like you're not on the trail right now because it's hard, but after a few more logs, you're going to look over that hill and see that little quad track. You're going to follow that quad track down the hill to the gravel road and to your connection with God. So let me end with this. May we no longer search for easy, but may we always search for God. Thanks, everyone. Have a good week.